Ron Ananian.
I think his name was Bob. It's always Bob, right? They always send out that guy, Bob. He's got Bob on the left breast pocket, you know? What's your name? Bob. You can tell without even looking at the guy. He's a Bob.
I'm Larry. This is my brother, Daryl. That's my other brother, Daryl.
The Car Doctor.
It's a quart every 2,000 miles.
Yeah, that's right on the money. Get your hands on Chrysler Bulletin 09-007-18. Chrysler says a quart every 2,000 miles is acceptable. Not acceptable to me.
Welcome to the radio home of Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. Since 1991, this is where car owners the world over turn to for their definitive opinion on automotive repair. If your mechanic's giving you a busy signal, pick up the phone and call in. The garage doors are open.
But I am here to take your calls at 855-560-9900.
And now, here's Ronnie.
I've got an awful lot to talk to you about this hour. I want to... Stories about some guy hacked into Tesla's. Great. Now we got to worry about this, like they hacked into the Jeeps a couple of years ago. And I've got some comments from some listeners in Michigan about different types of fuel to use in small engines. But I want to get to Susan in Virginia first. Susan, in Virginia, 96 Pontiac Grand Prix. You've been waiting there very patiently. How can I help you? Ron Ananian at your service.
Yes. Hi, Ron.
Hi.
I just had the water pump changed, and now I have coolant on the dipstick.
Okay. Why was the water pump changed?
The bearings were shot.
Okay. So the pump itself had failed.
Yes.
Noisy? Leaking? Both?
Yes. Yes, everything.
All right. I know of no way that pump comes out through the front. I don't know of a way why that would affect coolant in the oil. I'm trying to remember. This is the 3.1. This is the V6.
It's a V6. Okay. Yeah, 3.1.
Right. Have you taken it back to the shop that did the repair?
It was two young fellas that I know. They did it on the driveway.
Okay. Okay. Because coolant in the oil on that generation engine was usually a leaking intake manifold gasket. All right. The gasket's leaked from underneath. High mileage car?
182,000.
Yeah. Have you ever, you've owned it? Now, you couldn't have owned it since new, but how long have you owned the car?
Well, we've had it in the family since 40,000 miles.
Okay. Ever do intake manifold gaskets on it?
Probably not.
Okay. Probably do. Very common failure. Not something I would let two kids in the driveway do. Just out of curiosity, what was the attraction to let the two kids in the driveway do it? Was one of them a family member?
Yes, and, you know, they're mechanical, and,
right.
You know, they look on YouTube, and they help me, actually. They help me out, so
right.
I appreciate that.
Right. Yeah, I would, you know, and it depends. Is this the big V6 or the small V6?
How do I tell?
Is it a 3.1 or a 3.4?
The 3.1.
It's the 3.1, yeah, so it's the base motor. That's kind of a straight on and off procedure. There's no there's no connection there otherwise. You know, it's in and out. So I don't see why there would be coolant in the oil. You know, is it a case of have they cleaned, you know, have they changed the oil and the coolant keeps coming back?
I didn't do that yet. Yeah, they just did it Thursday. I'm going to have the oil changed,
right,
and see if it continues. Is there any way, like, the coolant came out of the radiator when they were, like, flushing it and got into the oil pan or anything like that?
Not from the radiator. And I don't know, you know, that water pump bolts into a front housing. I'm trying to remember it, that I believe just it was part of the coolant jacket. I don't remember there being a crossover into the engine oil system. So, you know, this is simple. Let's change the oil. The oil's got to come out anyway, right? There's coolant in it.
Right.
So if you change the oil and the coolant doesn't come back, then whether it was their fault or just part of the job, the problem's solved. If the coolant continues to come back, then I've got to think that, you know, we've either got a problem with the water pump if it's direct access to the crankcase, which I don't recall it does, unless this is the other engine, unless this is the 3.4, and or we've got leaky intake manifold gaskets. Go get the oil changed. Do this, Sue. Go get the oil changed, and then email me the VIN if you still have the problem, and I'll reference which engine this is, and then I can give you better advice, because I just want to be for you before I take you too deep. I want to be sure of what we're talking about. All right?
Okay. Now, the intake manifold gaskets, is that the head gaskets?
No. Intake manifold gaskets are separate. And again, depending upon which engine, may or may not be needed, may or may not be a big repair. So it's we need to know exact information which engine this is before we go any further. So, all right.
Okay.
You know, like they always say on all the great invasions in World War II, let's wait till we get there to see if we're going to die. Let's get the oil changed and see that it doesn't come back, and then we'll worry about it from there. You've got my email, ron@cardoctorshow.com.
I'll look it up.
Okay.
Let me ask you, should I put any kind of sealants in there?
No. No, I don't want a Band-Aid. Okay. I don't want to start doing any sealant, you know, until I... Well, let me ask the question this way. Is you know, what kind of shape is the car in? If you're still driving it and you've had the car since 40,000 miles, I've got this image of a really nice, kind of pristine 96 Pontiac Grand Prix. But you tell me, is it a nice car? Is it a, for lack of a better way to put it, is it a rat trap? Is it, you know, what is it? You know, how nice of a car is it? I'm trying to paint a picture here. Work with me.
My husband kind of messed it up, but right. I still love it and I still want to drive it. Yeah.
Right. Oh, so you have emotional attachment to this car.
Well, I like the big windows. I don't like the new cars that are all squashed down.
Right.
You know, it's big. So, yes, I'd like to keep it.
Okay. All right. Well, let's get the oil changed. The oil has to be changed. Let's do that first, and then we'll kind of take it from there. How's that for an answer?
That sounds great.
Okay.
I appreciate all your help.
You're very welcome. I'm here if you need me. You know where to find me. Okay. You be well.
Okay.
You're very welcome. Bye, Sue. See, you get into that emotional attachment to a car. Oh boy, that becomes an issue, right? Anyway, let's go over to Steve in New Hampshire. Let's see what's going on here. Steve, welcome to the Car Doctor, sir. How can I help?
Hi, Ron. How you doing this afternoon?
I'm doing great. I'm doing great, man.
Excellent.
I got no kick. So, what's going on?
Yes, I've got not too much, 2004 Chevy Tahoe, and just hitting 273,000 miles on her.
Just broken in?
And I was just broken in. I noticed the other day on the underside of the oil cap, there was a little bit of moisture and what appears to be the red Dexcool. And I was possibly thinking, I picked up a bottle of K-Seal. Is it okay to add that stuff as a preventive measure with that type of mileage on it?
Yeah, listen, at this point in the game, it's probably the most economical answer, because let's lay it out like this. If K-Seal didn't exist and you had to take it apart, what would it cost to overhaul or rebuild the engine?
Sure.
And then, you know, I don't know what New Hampshire's like, but I can tell you what New Jersey's like. You know where you have to go to get them? You know where you have to go to find an engine rebuilder in New Jersey? Maybe New Hampshire. There's no machine shops left in the north part of the state. There might be some in central or south. And you can tell that by the number of new cars that are in the north part of the state and the number of dealerships at one time that had new cars on their lots but now have used cars, but they're not doing heavy engine work, you know, per se. They're replacing engines, but they're not doing, you know, individual rebuilds. It's not nearly as common as it once was.
Wow. If I were going to introduce this, again, 5.3 V8 Vortec, would I introduce it into the overflow bottle, and will that circulate throughout the block?
No, I'd rather put it right into the radiator. Pull a little coolant out of the radiator. You know, I believe a bottle of K-Seal is, I can't remember if it's 8 ounces, 10 ounces, 10, 12 ounces, whatever it is. But I'd pull like amount out of the radiator by whatever means you've got. And if you've got a suction gun, that would be a great thing. And just pull it out and pour in the bottle of K-Seal, read the instructions on the back of the bottle, and just pour it in and go. Now the condensation inside the oil cap may or may not be coolant related. That may be sludge in the crankcase. And, you know, you may have two issues here. You know, actually seeing coolant in the oil cap is one thing, but the yellow, for lack of a way to put it, the yellow snot that's in there, That's usually a description of sludge from moisture contamination, either from driving style, inadequate oil changes, quality of oil, possibly quality of fuel, you know, lack of fuel system cleaning. You know, there's a lot of factors that go into this that will create that combustion leakage down past the cylinder walls and so forth. So, but to solve the coolant problem, I like a bottle of K-Seal. I think if I was sending my kid away to college and they were far from home, when I took them through the drill of what to do when the car breaks, as far as, you know, flat tires, dead batteries, and that drill, I think there's a bottle of K-Seal in the glove compartment. If you develop a coolant leak, you know, I would explain the proper procedure for adding it to it, cold engine, lower the coolant reserve level. You know, I would give them part of the drill. I think K-Seal should be in the glove compartment of every kid going to college's car. I think it's good preventative maintenance.
Excellent. You know, thank you so much for the help, Ron.
You're very welcome, Steve. You be well. You have a great rest of the weekend.
You too. Be safe. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye. I'm Ron Ananian, the car doctor, 855-560-9900, 855-560-9900. The car doctor's 24/7 phone number. You can call that number anytime, day or night. I've got Tom on standby. You know, you can call that number, 855-560-9900, at 2 o'clock in the morning, and Tom Ray will answer the phone. He may not be happy about
it. My wife's getting tired of this because she does like to sleep too, you know.
So, but you can leave a message and Tom will get back to you. Or maybe Tom's wife will get back to you. We'll see. You know, when she's done yelling at him. So, but in any event, though, poor Sue Ray, she has to put up with Tom Ray. God bless that woman. She's earning her stripes and wings. So every day. We'll both be back right after this. Don't go away.
It's the little old lady from Pasadena.
He drives that way, but when it comes to fixing cars, Ron has car advice done right. 855-560-9900. Here's Ron.
Hey, let's do some email and get some of these stories out of the way. I want to say my piece while I can. A couple of weeks ago, we were talking about a couple of you had called in with some comments and concerns, your small engines, your snow blowers, your lawnmowers, you were putting them away, your snow blowers, you were getting them ready, about fuel. And, you know, I talked to you about one of the brands I like is Top Fuel, but they're all this, you know, an ethanol-free fuel was the idea. You can get Top Fuel, I think, at Home Depot or, you know, the hardware stores. You can buy it online at Amazon. You know, it's out there. But the idea is that it's an ethanol-free fuel. It was kind of expensive. A couple of you wrote in, but Biff wrote in an interesting comment. He said, hey, Ron, in Michigan, I purchase ethanol-free gasoline. Now, this might be a state thing, right? Maybe it's not available everywhere. But I purchase ethanol-free gasoline, 90-octane at regular gas station. It is marketed as REC gas, at an actual pump. My last 2-gallon fill-up 2 weeks ago was $3.79 per gallon. Some stations are above $4 a gallon. I use it exclusively in all my small engine equipment. But even running this gas, I do not winter over with gas in the system. Now I'll winter. I'll leave it in. I'll winter over with Top Fuel. I'll leave it in there. In some situations, sometimes I will run them out. But the ethanol-free stuff seems to help. But you know, I won't winter over the summer, or I'm sorry, the winter fuel. The snowblower gets drained. The lawnmower, it doesn't seem to be as important, although this year I had the opportunity to, although I only did it 2 weeks ago. It took me that long to get back out to the shed to drain the lawnmower, run it long enough. We've been so busy. Biff continues, there's a website, although it may not be up to date, that shows stations who sell pure gasoline by state and town. He doesn't list the website, but I get the point, Bill. Biff in Lansing, Michigan. It's out there. So the idea is it's the ethanol that's hurting the small engines, especially in the fuel that's sitting and going any length of time, it's creating the problem. So be aware of that. Tom points out, he says to me, hey, Tom just texted me. He said, hey, Ron, there's ethanol-free recreational gas. I guess that's recreational at Sunoco's in upstate New York. And Tom would know that since he is the long distance traveler around upstate New York. See?
Yeah. Well, that's, I spend a lot of times up at the Thousand Lakes area. So you've got the St. Lawrence River up there and all the different various lakes, and people have boats, and in this weather here, winter, there's snowmobiles and everything else. So they just go over to the Sunoco station and fill up with the ethanol free stuff.
Were you upstate this week?
Thankfully, no.
I heard it was zero up there. I heard zero.
Actually, it was zero at my house this morning.
Oh, gosh. So I can't imagine what it was in upstate New York.
Let's see. The other night it was 18 degrees here, and I've got a transmitter site up in Lake George on a 3,000-foot hill, and the temperature was reporting up there as minus 20.
Wow. Now, look at the technology, you know, and this is why I bring this up, right? We all, you know, look at what we've come to expect from cars, and we don't even think about it. And if you're an older driver, okay, you know, go back 20 years ago and think about if you were driving a used vehicle 20 years ago. So it likely was a 10-year-old something with a carburetor on it, okay? And maybe it was a 15-year-old something with a carburetor on it. Carburetors have been gone since 87, 88, I think. But my point is, look at the range of temperature. You know, this week we went from, I think the beginning of the week here in New Jersey, it was, you know, 40-something, and then it dropped down into 13. It's 9 degrees out there today. You know, I'm sure upstate New York is zero at Tom's house, and it's probably below zero further up. Look at what we're asking cars to do in the range of just in oil alone. Imagine that oil sitting out there in the cold all night long. When you hear that wind howling, and you go out there in the morning after it's been sitting 8 or 10 hours since you last drove it, you know, home from work or home from wherever you came, and then you go out and you start it. Think of the strain that's on that and why it's so important for that car to have good, proper care. And then you can't be surprised if you don't do the maintenance when it breaks, although some of you are, which kind of blows my mind. You know, I can't stress maintenance enough. More in the winter than in the summer. I mean, nobody likes to get stuck, and I stress maintenance year-round. But, you know, getting stuck in a snowdrift, getting stuck when it's cold, getting stuck at work when the car doesn't start on a cold, dark night, you know, not good. Not December, January, February, March. July, you know, you pull the lawn chair out, you get the barbecue out, you fire it up, and you cook something while you're waiting for the tow truck to show up. But you're not going to do that in the winter months, so it's important.
Well, I'll give you an idea. In upstate New York, I think it was 2 years ago, I went up there to change out some satellite receivers between Christmas and New Year's, and I went to bed that night at the hotel. It was 35, 40 degrees outside, and I got up the next morning, Ron, it was minus 30.
And that's how
much it dropped. And my car actually started.
You know, Tom, and then you have to ask yourself, as a mechanic, one of the things we go through in the shop is, you know, doing oil changes, what air pressure do we put in tires? You know, the climate and the environment changes so quickly. You look at the door placard. So we never look at, you never look at what's on the side of the tire as far as tire pressure. That is maximum recommended tire pressure for the tire, not the vehicle. All right. And you should have correct tire on the vehicle. You don't want to have something that exceeds or under exceeds spec as far as the requirement by the manufacturer. But you look at the door jam sticker and it'll show you the tire placard. If the tire placard says they want 30 pounds in the tires of the car, and that's the standard, they're doing that based on 68 degrees. So, you know, now you've got to think ahead when you do the service. If you're doing the service in September, you know, do you do it at 30? If you do it at 30 by December, and it may not be due for an oil change again by December, that tire pressure may have dropped 4 pounds just by loss of temperature. So you're always playing, adding and subtracting, and it gets to be a project. We still have to check tire pressure on a regular basis. It's still very important. I'm Ron Anani in the Car Doctor. I'll be back right after this. Don't go away.
Who's gonna drive you home tonight?
Welcome back. We're on Nanny the Car Doctor. I was thinking about, well, and I try not to post this stuff. Did you see the article about Tesla and the autopilot case? It came out, I think it was last year, and now they're trying the person that was in the car while the car was on autopilot, and they're holding that person accountable for the function. They're saying now if you drive the car on autopilot. And we were wondering where this was going to go, right? We talked about this, you and I, over the years, you know, in that where will the legal statutes take us when the first vehicle on autopilot has an accident and a fatality? And in this case, they're saying it was the operator's fault. It was the person sitting in the seat of the vehicle. And I think that's going to set precedent, and we'll see where that goes going forward. The article then goes on to talk about some of the flaws in the Tesla systems and, you know, some of the other issues that they're concerned about. And I didn't post it to Facebook because I know it's going to generate a whole bunch of, we're going to go back and forth and back and forth. I figured I'd just mention it up here on the show. I'm trying not to become the anti-electric car doctor because I'm not. I'm just trying to present the facts. I really am. And then I came across this article on, we look at this website called Gizmodo, G-I-Z-M-O-D-O, gizmodo.com. And it talks about a teen researcher claims he can remotely access 25 Teslas around the globe without the owners knowing it. This article came out January 12th of this year. And it talks about, it starts out this way. Imagine you're driving down the road in a new Tesla with your legs stretched out as the autopilot maintains your speed when the car stereo suddenly starts blasting at full force. During your scramble to pull over, you notice your windows start lowering as if controlled by a ghost. Then out of nowhere, the door springs open. Those are just some of the high-stakes hijinks a 19-year-old researcher says he can pull after remotely hacking into at least 25 Teslas spread out over across 13 countries. The researcher named David Colombo posted details via a Twitter thread on Tuesday. Are we concerned about that? You know, in the sense, I remember when the two hackers got into the Jeep Cherokees back in 2015, and within the year, we now change the way scan tools function in a repair shop. And we now have to, on Chrysler, we have to access the cloud. The cloud has to recognize the scan tool. There has to be a security handshake between the two in order to accurately diagnose and repair. But this kind of goes one step further. And, you know, at what point does it become a national security issue? All right. The more involved we get with computers on cars, the more this stuff is going to happen. And then this sets up a whole nother level of security requirement that it just becomes an issue. So it's an interesting article. He didn't provide specific details. It goes on to say on how he obtained access to the vehicle system, but noted it wasn't the result of a vulnerability in Tesla's underlying infrastructure. The researcher claimed, David Colombo claimed, he was actually trying to notify the owners of the affected vehicles and that he would release more technical details once the affected drivers were able to take appropriate measures. So it sounds like this is going to be an ongoing story that this person has found a loophole in the security structure of the way Teslas are put together. And you wonder if the other electric vehicles can be far behind. And then we got this article, courtesy of GM, that talked about how GM, and I forget who we were talking to recently within the last 2 months, that brought up the point that, you know, Tesla really has dominated the market. I think it was Mark Mills from the Manhattan Institute, and he was right. You know, Tesla has dominated portions of the electric vehicle market with their luxury vehicles, but you have to start to think that when a company the size of a GM or Ford or Toyota, you know, the bigger companies, get into the electric vehicle market, they're going to start to pull away from Tesla. Well, GM plans for electric vehicle charging. This article comes to us from the carbuzz.com website that talks about how GM is now going to start creating mobile and fixed power stations. And I was wondering how they were going to do this. They're developing some sort of a mobile power station so that when you're stuck on the road, and we talked about this right when the winter storm occurred in Virginia a couple of weeks ago and I-95 was bottlenecked for that 26 miles or however long it was. We said, how would you get the electric vehicle out of there? Would it have to be towed? You know, how would you maintain? You at the time, we said you can't bring an electric vehicle owner 5 gallons of electrons to, you know, get the car started again. You know, how would you develop this to, you know, get that car out of there? Imagine having to tow all these electric vehicles. Well, GM is developing some sort of mobile power station that will bring electricity to the vehicles. So it'll be interesting. The goal is the automaker has announced plans to accelerate its market presence with its new hydrotech-based mobile and fixed power stations. Aside from electric vehicles, these state-of-the-art generators are intended for work sites, data centers, and even military support. Aha. The generators will all be powered by GM's Generation 2 hydrotech fuel cell cubes. The goal is for them to replace gas and diesel burning powered sources. So did you catch the military mention in there? So the aim is to produce a generator capable of fast charging electric vehicles without having to expand the electrical grid or even install permanent charging stations in remote areas. Sometimes power sources are only needed on a temporary basis. Both the U.S. Army Combat Capabilities Command Ground Vehicle Systems Center and the Michigan Economic Development Corporation are helping fund these programs. So I guess the military is going electric too. You know, that's got to be an interesting conversation. We should have a talk with somebody there as well. But lots of changes coming in the world of electric vehicles. Let's pull over and take a pause. 855-560-9900. I'm Ron Anning, the Car Doctor. We'll be back right after this. Don't go away. Welcome back. Ron Anning, the Car Doctor. The phone number, by the way, is 855-560-9900. You can call that number anytime, day or night, 24-7. It doesn't matter, right? You can call 855-560-9900 and leave a message. Or understand, this radio show, being as it's syndicated, it goes around the country and around the world via podcast. You can call the 855-560-9900 phone number. Saturdays, We're live in the studio Saturdays, 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern time. And, you know, we can talk about your car and its problems. So you don't have to have me live in your market, per se, you know, as we try to motor on and fix all of these broken cars. I was thinking, you know, about this week in the shop, how busy the shop was and some of the repairs that we've done. And I always like to do that from time to time. It kind of gives me a barometer of the state of mind of the economy, your state of mind, what you're thinking about with your vehicles. And I think that you, the consumer, and how you treat your vehicle and what you're willing to do to take care of it versus replacing it is a pretty good sign of, you know, a lot of things. Faith in the economy, confidence in the world situation, the supply of replacement vehicles, the price of replacement vehicles. You know, all of that plays a factor into you deciding whether or not you want to fix your car or not. We had a couple of big repairs in the last 4 or 5 weeks. Most recently, we did a 2011 Toyota Sienna. A 2011 Sienna that needed front lower control arms, rear brake overhaul, a drive axle, and a couple other odds and ends, and it went out the door for about $4,000. And, you know, here's an 11-year-old vehicle with 120, 115,000 miles on it. And as Matthew said to me, he said, Ron, we want to drive this car another 4 or 5 years. And we're not afraid to put a little money in it because look at what it costs to replace it. And I think you are all getting quite an education in the cost of a replacement vehicle. And that's really what this portion of the Car Doctor is about. I've really started to look at what replacement vehicles cost. Unless you're driving a pregnant roller skate, there aren't a lot of cars to put a family of four in for under $35,000 anymore. Not comfortably, not with groceries, not to go on vacation with, not to go to the relatives over the holidays with, not to put more than four people in. It gets harder and harder. There's not a lot out there. A Ford Explorer is $55,000, almost $60,000. A Chevy Suburban, heck, you can start out at $75,000. $75,000. Somebody was telling me the other day, a friend of theirs bought a Chevy Suburban, optioned out, it was $103,000. I don't know that to be true. I said, but what could possibly make it worth $103,000? That's crazy. Here's my point. This is, and I've been thinking about this for a while, and I wanted to present that I did some research this week. So certain parts of the country don't seem to have vehicles. And I thought this idea was so brilliant. It's not mine. I got this from somebody. They pointed it out. They said it to me, and they didn't even realize they had said it. If you're looking for a vehicle, if you are trying to replace your vehicle, and you know you're looking for something different, and where you live, like here in New Jersey, you know, if you want to go out and buy a vehicle, they're charging you list price because of conditions. There's no vehicles out there. They're charging you list price plus some of the dealerships, not all of the dealerships, are adding anywhere from $3,000 to $5,000, and they're calling it a market, a state of the market indicator. They've got some fancy term. They've created all sorts of different nomenclatures and ways to title it, but they're basically trying to add $3,000 to $5,000 to the price of the car on top of list. You know, if you go to the Midwest, if you go to the middle of the country, and I tried this, I went looking for a Chevy pickup in the tri-state area. Can't really find anything. Couldn't find what I wanted. Limited supply, limited selection. And I went to Kansas. I just typed in Chevy Dealers Kansas. And I think it was Marty McClay Chevrolet or something, McCauley Chevrolet, some dealer group down there. They had 43 different model Chevy pickup trucks. No mention of, you know, market demand or market indicator surcharge, so to speak. And I thought, geez, you know, you could go down to the Midwest, you could buy the car or the vehicle, the truck you want, and either drive it back or have it trucked back for either less than the surcharge or probably the cost of the surcharge, but at least you get the vehicle you want. Which just, you know, maybe we've got to start thinking outside the box. If you're looking for a new vehicle, and, you know, some of you are and some of you aren't, but if you're looking for a new vehicle and your local dealer does not have it, maybe you need to, you know, get online and start looking. And maybe your local dealer will go to Virginia or Kansas or wherever to procure that vehicle and bring it to their dealership to sell it. Maybe there's ways to do that. I don't know. The vehicle situation is getting really tight and crazy out there. And somebody said that to me this week, that they went to Kansas and purchased a new vehicle and they paid a little bit less than sticker and there was no surcharge. And they drove it back. I think it was an 1,800-mile trip. And as she said, hey, what better way to break in the vehicle at a nice steady speed out on the interstate and make a little bit of a road trip out of it? And I thought, you know what? Why not? Talk about the ultimate, you know, social distancing, right? You're alone in your own vehicle for 1,800 miles. I kind of like that idea. So just food for thought. 855-560-9900. Ron and Andy and the Car Doctor coming back right after this. Don't go away. Welcome back, Ron and Andy and the Car Doctor. Let's go to Barry in Virginia Beach. Has a quick dealer story. So what's on your mind, Barry? How can I help?
Hey, good afternoon, sir. I just wanted to share something with you. This is kind of an interesting, very unconventional story. A friend of mine, she has, I believe it's a 2017 Audi Q5, and she keeps having to add antifreeze to it, but it's not leaking anywhere, and it smells. I said, what's probably happening is you got a crack in the block, and it's burning it. Sure enough, I was right. She has it towed to a checkered flag dealership. They disassemble the entire engine, I mean, nuts, bolts, washers, valves, lifters, everything, and put everything in the back seat and in the last part where the storage area is, and then say they can't fix it and charge her $4,000. What do you think about that?
Well, wait a minute. Back up the truck here a minute. This is a 17. Okay. This vehicle's only 4 years old, right? Mm-hmm. How many miles are on it? 5 years old. How many miles are on it?
50,000, 130,000, something like that.
What did she authorize them to do?
In a roundabout, naive way, without knowledge of knowing what she was doing, just fix it.
Well,
I wouldn't have done.
But. Right? Did she? What did she sign? She had to sign something. She had to sign an authorization to repair, right? If not, you know, and this is a perfect close to the show this week, Barry, because I opened the show of the previous hour with the segue talking about do you set yourself up to fail with your mechanic? You know, she needs to sign a piece of paper saying she's willing to spend X on a diagnosis, and they need to have her sign something so they need to know what to do. Otherwise, they take carte blanche. If she really walked in, you know, the worst thing in the world to say to any mechanic, this mechanic, any mechanic is do whatever you got to do. I don't care what it costs. Because I've done that. When I was younger, I did that. You know what? People got annoyed.
Right.
Well, you said do whatever it takes. This is what it took. Well, I had no idea. Well, then what did you say it for? I didn't think it would be that much. You know, everybody's perception. So, you know, did she sign anything? Did she sign something?
Yeah.
You know, was it a regular Audi dealership or was it an independent chain of repairs? It was an Audi dealer.
No, it was a regular, it was the most reputable Audi dealership in Virginia Beach. High class place. Very nice people that work there.
And are they able to fix it?
No. It left there on a flatbed wrecker with every nut, washer, bolt, valve spring, lifter, everything in disarray in the back seat.
And what was the diagnosis? Totally what did it need? A new engine?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And what did they say that would cost?
I think she bought one from a place outside of Durham, North Carolina, called Lifetime Audi, and they had it shipped here. And I want to say around $7,000. Yeah.
So she's put, and now she still has to have it put in the car.
Right, right. And then on top of this, tires, brakes, the engine, the installment of the engine. So she's going to end up putting about 15 into a car that I don't think is worth $5,000.
Well, you know, there's the replacement factor, but the problem here becomes, you know, what kind of shape is this car really in, or how did this car get into such condition? Is she the original owner? And good Lord, what happens if the transmission fails? A lot of questions. She needs more answers. Get her to start signing things before she just gives carte blanche at the repair shop. Appreciate the story, Barry. I'm Ron Ananian, the car doctor, looking up, saying time to go. Till the next time, good mechanics aren't expensive. They're priceless. See ya.